please welcome your host, David.
Truth, the show that sows a grain of truth into the cornfield of lies. Or cornflies. Your grain of truth today. In American history, recent research has discovered that the Civil War was actually the really passive-aggressive war. No, I don't mind being stabbed. It's okay, I didn't need to live. And in mathematics, X's don't need to be solved, only be listened and let go. To introduce our panelists for this episode, it's over to the tastefully octahedral Matthew Headcraft.
The Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology, representing Media Studies, it's Stacey Taylor. From the University of Tasmania, representing Monsters, it's Scott McAteer. From Monash University, representing Medicine, it's Dr. Brad McKay. University of Melbourne, Melbourne campus, it representing literature, it's Tim Redmond!
The rules of Grain of Truth are simple. I award points to the panelists for their responses to my ridiculously absurd questions, scenarios, and topics. And whoever has the most points wins the coveted Grain of Truth prize, which this week is the manuscript of Heisenberg's lesser-known theory, the public transport uncertainty principle. If you know the whereabouts of the train, you will not know how delayed it'll be. Now, before we begin the quiz, here's a small challenge for everyone in the room today and for you listeners at home. Can you name the grain of truth that connects all four of our panelists' topics? That's media, monsters, medicine, and literature. And we'll come back to the answer at the end of the program, but I will give you a clue. The year 1998. So I'll let you think that there is a grain of truth that combines all of those topics. But let's begin now with round one, which is what we call Right Said Ted. Each player must give a Ted-style talk on a topic relating to their field. Stacey Taylor, you're first, and your topic is the plays of Shakespeare of documented reality television programs. Ladies and gentlemen, Stacey Taylor!
Thank you, David, and this is absolutely true. The plays of Shakespeare are, in fact, documented reality television programmes. Now, Shakespeare, my research has proved, was not a playwright. He was a struggling poet who took some temp work as a television transcriber. He was paid, I believe, the minimum wage of 1/2 groat per hour, for those who like a fun fact. Now, people that detract my theory say that I'm trying to undermine Shakespeare's talent, and I am not, because this was an excruciatingly difficult job in the 16th century. His tools of transcription were merely a quill and a parchment, and I don't know if you know this about Elizabethan England, but it was very, very common to get your TiVo stolen. Now, this, in fact, had happened to Shakespeare. We know this from his journals. So after that happened, he was no longer able to record, rewind, or pause. He had to write it all down in real time. Unless there was a repeat omnibus on a Sunday, and that was not common in the English Renaissance. So there he was. Now, my detractors are not letting me publish my findings in a peer-reviewed journal because they keep going on about things like, you know, boring proof and stuff. But if you want evidence of my theory, I invite you to look no further than A Midsummer Night's Dream. Now, A Midsummer Night's Dream is not, as the English literature scholars would have it, a comedy of three cleverly interwoven parallel narratives. No, it was three stormingly popular reality television programmes from the Golden Age, all playing on a Thursday night, that Shakespeare had to transcribe by changing channels in the air freight. It's true. So if you're familiar with the so-called play, we had the lovers Hermia, Helena, Lysander and Demetrius in the forest. That was actually one of the first known broadcasts of what we understand today as wife swap. Now the storyline with Titania and the donkey would not reach contemporary broadcasting standards and is probably best described as The Bachelorette Meets Animal Rescue. And it is good that it died around the 18th century. Now, what is probably embarrassingly obvious to you all now is that the Mechanicals were the first contestants in the first known broadcast of Britain's Got Talent. They were the finalists, in fact, and they were performing before a panel of very, very strict judges who had very quippy comebacks like, "He doth play on his prologue like a child on a recorder." These are not Shakespearean lines. These are just what Shakespeare was writing down furiously as Hippolyta and Theseus said them. So until I find a publisher, I want to at least know that you are with me. Shakespeare's plays are in fact transcripts of reality television. Thank you very much.
So on that same note, would you say that some of Shakespeare's plays, therefore, in a loop, influence our reality television today?
Absolutely. Simon Cowell was influenced by Hippolyta and Theseus, clearly, and keeps that to himself.
Well, our next speaker is Scott McAteer, and your topic today is monsters are people to discuss. Ladies and gentlemen, Scott McAteer.
Thank you. Now, I could talk about all the angsty, brooding monsters that you're familiar with, like the Frankenstein monster and Barney the Vampire and Louis from an Interview with a Vampire and, of course, Dracula. but instead, I'm going to talk to you about the time when monsters became people. Now, in chronology, I'm sure you all know, we use the term vampire killer for a particular kind of killer. Someone like Tracy Whittington, the lesbian vampire killer, or Peter Curtin, the vampire of Dusseldorf, who became the basis of Fritz Lang's M. It's a particular kind of horrible murderer. But, of course, a vampire used to be an actual literal thing that people believed in, an actual undead person that had to be dug up, head cut off, stake you through the heart. Now, I'm sure you all can see that the words would change over time, but not many people know that it actually changed through the course of one particular event. In the 1860s, there was a ship called the Atlantic, which was an American whaling ship, and it left port with a Portuguese sailor called James Brown. James Brown, not very much a Portuguese name. I'm suspecting his name was James, and the rest of the crew just called him Brown because he was a bit brown. But anyway, this ship travelled through the seas without any problems until one day James Brown stabbed another sailor and drank his blood. Very scary. So they locked him up. He was a vampire. They had to get him back to port and deal with him. Now, there are various sort of rumours about what they did at the time, or whether or not they had to take him back to port because they had no hawthorn on the ship, and they knew that vampires had to be staked with a hawthorn stake. Other stories are that they took shifts saying the Lord's Prayer over him, and he just foamed and railed but couldn't move while they were saying the Lord's Prayer. Anyway, they get back to ship. They go to the local sort of establishment and say, we've got a vampire, how do we deal with him? And they say, don't be silly, vampires aren't real. He's clearly a crazy person, and he stood trial and was committed to a mental institution. Now, when James Brown left port, he was a blood-sucking, undead vampire. But when he came back, he was just a crazy person. And crazy people became the new monsters. As we've got sort of the werewolf murderers from France, like Gilles Garnier, Jacques Roulotte, and so on, they still killed people, but they're no longer beasts with teeth and fangs. They're just crazy people. And now we have different words, not werewolf. We have words like cannibal, sociopath, and serial killer. And that's our monsters. The monsters in the dark who no longer need sharp teeth or fangs. So our monsters aren't just demons. Our monsters are people too.
And of course there's other names including Year 9 students. Yes.
They're people too, Dave.
Our next speaker for today is Dr. Brad McKay, and your topic is doctors are the worst kind of people. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Brad McKay.
Doctors are the worst kind of people. You'll find out pretty soon. I was just looking at my life, and as a doctor, I like to segment things into three, into a triad. So I'm going to start with high school. I've also done high school into a triad from watching High School Musical. And we all know, looking back at high school and the people that were around us, it really sort of fits into three main groups. So the people that become doctors are either nerds, jocks. So the nerds, they hang out at the library, they're a little bit awkward, nobody really gets along with them. Sort of the worst kinds of people that you can come across. The jocks, they're multi-talented, they're really, really good. The ones that get into medicine have photographic memories as well, and they don't really try very hard, so we hate them because they're too good and have far too many talents. And then I fit into the third group, which is like the most evil group, which is musical theatre. The worst kinds of people get into medicine. So then if you're actually getting into medicine, I kind of think, well, would you want to date me? Like, in the evenings, I'm at university, so in the evenings I'm spending time studying, not really going out much, having to have an early night. In the morning, getting up early, going and cutting up dead people. In the afternoon, coming back smelling like formaldehyde. Then have to go to bed early and start the whole process again. So really, you wouldn't really see me whatsoever. The other aspect of it is romance. So imagine that you're sitting there with a date. So we're on a date together. There's roses, there's wine. We're just chilling out there. Can't have too much wine because it's bad for you. And then I'm there looking at your arms, sizing things up. And wanting to cannulate your veins. That's a little bit weird. So over the medical profession as well, like over the course, we learn to deconstruct people. So imagine having sex deconstructed. Everything's in segments. And then into working life, tired all the time, developing a morbid sense of humour to sort of cope with the stress of medicine as well. Coming back home and saying, oh, look, sorry, honey, I've delivered 10 babies today and I've sewed up 8 vaginas. What if we just cuddle and hug? And then your response would be, well, maybe after you've had a shower, you smell like meconium lycor. We can't say baby on this screen. No, meconium lycor. So as a summary, doctors are the worst kinds of people. You should consider, like, being friends, date, or marry somebody like a naturopath, because at least they come back from work smelling of lavender, and you can get a good massage.
Is there any other occupations that you reckon that are dateable?
A florist? A florist? They smell nice and they won't try to deconstruct their flowers too much. It's more putting things together.
Okay. Other panel members, what would be your ideal other half occupation?
I don't know, that all sounded kind of hot. Doctors are people too.
On that note, we're on to our final speaker for the first round, which is Tim Redmond, and his topic is Chekhov Hipster Paladin. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Redmond.
Hello, everyone. Chekhov is a remarkable human being. I've never met him. He's one of these authors who you feel you need to strike ownership over, that you should have knowledge of, even if his stories, of which he wrote over 200 short stories, 12 plays, 4 of which are very famous, even if they thoroughly confuse you, you feel you must be able to raise a finger and go, aha, I bet Chekhov would say. And that's what I was going to talk about today until I went up the street and ordered my coffee. And a gentleman, let's call him a hipster. Are any hipsters here today? No one will ever own up in that tribe. Because if you admit to being a hipster, you're not a hipster.
Whatever, man. You can't name me.
I asked him how he was, and his answer was this. Rockstar. I was like, okay. Neil Young, Gene Simmons. And I was getting to think that the power of language and the absurdity of language, and what he just did there was trying to have an impact by saying something incredibly interesting, and I was confounded. And then I thought of Chekhov, and I raised my finger and thought, what would Chekhov say? Chekhov's beauty for me is his absence of language. It's the space between the very simple words. I mean, he's translated from Russian, so God knows what's going wrong there. But very simple words constructed in such a way that the meaning is in between. We as readers must reach in. We have a dialogue with the book. Much more than I had a dialogue with a person, an actual opposite living person, who says, Rockstar! As an answer to, how are you feeling? This is the beauty of Chekhov, and I think hipsters should embrace this man for many reasons. Superficially, he wore little glasses, he wore a waistcoat, he wore those cool, you know, furry hats that you can wear even when it's not hot. He died young. He's tragic. Tattoo worthy. Get a little Chekhov quote on your arm there. Put it in Russian. No one needs to know. The thing I love about him, the thing I did not get from this one gentleman, I'm going to be thinking about this guy. Really, I resent him because he was taller and more handsome than me. Let's get to the point. Was Chekhov's use of literal. The literal becomes a metaphor. The opening lines of The Seagull, anyone who knows it, is Medvedenko is wandering along with Masha, and he asks her, why is it you always wear black? And her answer is, I am in mourning for my life. That's the answer I want when I ask, how are you? Because I'm asking you. I don't want a rock star. Imagine if that was the opening of The Seagull. Why do you always wear black? Rockstar Johnny Cash! Finally, a quote. A quote from Chekhov that I would take with me. Any idiot can face a crisis. It's this day-to-day living that wears you out. So let's treat each other literally and find the metaphor through that literalism. I'm in mourning for my life. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Actually, that brings up a really lovely idea. If you could think of a film quote or book quote or a quote from a famous person that describes your day, what would it be? Stacey, what would be your quote?
Well, I particularly like a quote from the play and now film, August Osage County. Yeah. Thank God we can't see the future or we'd never get out of bed.
Actually, there's a line from Trent Reznor which always resonates with me, which is like, I believe I can see the future because every day is exactly the same.
That's kind of link.
Oh, how delightfully depressing.
Now to the happy side.
Brad, is there a quote that inspires you or that you think of?
And the one that feels the most to me is Rockstar!
How delightful. Well, at the end of that round, Brad is in the lead by 7 points.
Yeah.
Our next round is the analysis and application round. Our panel is broken up into teams of two, and they must apply their skills to an application task. And we're going to start with Stacey and Scott with this one. I will be challenging you to explain poetry for me. Now, we have, grain of truth, a resident artist, Jasper Hootnanny, who's an accomplished poet, writer, artist, and tweeter. And he's written some poems, and I'm just going to read them out in the most poetry reading way I possibly can. And I just need you to explain what these poems mean. So the first one goes like this. Sky heat on my shoulder makes me unhappy. The rays shine unlike me. Come enter to the death of you.
That's not a poet at all. That is a voiceover from Bondi Rescue.
Could you do it now, please, Stacey, as you heard it? So there's a young guy who's wandered out, he's drowning beyond the beams.
Sky, hey! On my shoulder makes me unhappy. Grey shine on like me, come into to the death of you.
It's a shark!
Our next poem goes like this. Perspex. Eyes! Look, windmills of your mind, Mrs. Cumberdale.
Mrs. Cumberdale, of course.
Well, of course.
Of course. Clearly represents his mother.
Oh, there we go. And our final one.
Rockstar!
Our final one here is a little bit more lyrical, I think. There once was a guy named Amos who wanted to be really famous. Once was a dag, now he wears drag. He's never been more glamorous.
I'm actually quite moved by that one.
Entirely autobiographical.
That is a screaming cry for the human condition.
Yeah.
And I think a metaphor for when you're growing herbs in a heat wave and they wilt on the balcony.
Yeah. Oh. So you want them to be glamorous.
You want them to be glamorous.
Fit with the rhyme scheme.
Indeed. Of life. Ladies and gentlemen, next, for Tim and Brad, are we challenging you to a movie trailer? Now, certain discoveries are usually made by science and history and other things, and sometimes people write lives and autobiographies, but they're not terribly interesting. That's why we wait for the movie, because it's all fine if the movie says based on a true story. And so what I want you to do is the movie trailer between the two of you about a particular new discovery, and it's actually from, I think it was from last week, that a new species of river dolphin was discovered. So if I could see the movie trailer for this fact.
Just picture this blank screen, white, simple font. Based on actual events, ellipses,
asterisks.
Oh,
like FML, like crazy. Yeah, like pitch this idea. There's Matthew McConaughey, and he's standing on top of a bridge.
And his hair is magnificent.
he looks down and there's a little flippery thing in the water that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's shallow water, and he takes off his glasses, and the camera comes into the blazing blue eyes, and he stares 3 to 4 minutes in close up.
There's a beautiful lady on the side of the river as well. Like her locks, her golden locks,
Kate Blanchett.
On the back. Yes, yes, yes. You've got it. Mm. Then they lock eyes. They lock eyes with the dolphin.
Mm. A three-way lock, difficult to do. But Matthew McConaughey, man, his eyes can.
It's a beautiful romantic triad.
And then surprise, surprise, he takes his shirt off.
Perfect.
Jumps up onto the edge of the bridge, stands there perfectly, McConaughey balanced.
Jesus-esque.
Wow.
Jesus-esque.
Wow. Yes. Jesus-esque.
Yeah.
Backlit, sunlight. It's like you just see the silhouette of McConaughey. And he dives through the air. Blanchett says something really, really cool and classical about England.
In an English accent, we have to get that accent.
Yeah, she says,
yeah.
Matthew, why? And he slams into the water, 3 inches of water where a little flippery thing was slippering about.
And in Steve Irwin style, grabs the dolphin because he
Steve Irwin style. Oh boy, it's a sad story.
Pulls the dolphin up and then brings it up.
Brings it up to Kate. Climbs that mountain, he hands Kate the flippery thing.
And she names it McConaughey.
McConaughey. McConaughey. We fade out. We fade in on a man smoking a cigarette. He's got a bad moustache. He's cross-eyed. Glasses are sitting on his nose and he's sweating.
He's tapping at a typewriter. He's looking remarkably like Chekhov.
He raises a single finger.
He reaches forward and he says,
Rockstar!
I am Ed Black.
Oh, the Pavlovian reaction to that word now.
Coming
famous
soon.
Musician.
What's to the theater near you.
And at the end of that round, I see that Stacey's in the lead by Avogadro's number. So that's right.
Which is lovely.
And now we're on to our final round, which is called Stumble, Mumble or Bumble. And this round has our panel put on the spot with some quick-fire ridiculous questions. If I feel that they have stumbled, mumbled or bumbled, I shall make a noise like that, and then I shall nominate for another panel member to take over from the topic. Our first speaker will be Scott, and your question is, the bed is prime real estate for monsters.
Oh, the bed is prime real estate for monsters, both above and below. The below-the-bed monster we all remember from when we were children. They live there, partly because of the dust, which is made from skin flakes. Tasty, tasty skin flakes.
Now, let's move on to Brad.
Underneath the bed there is a picket fence with a little path that goes out to the front door, and you can't walk onto that path without being killed by the monster.
Too middle class. Let's move on to Stacey.
Children everywhere.
Ding!
Tim.
Children everywhere sit in silent horror in the middle of their bed as the clock strikes midnight. They hear the scratching of the for sale sign getting hammered into the floor. There's only one buyer, though, and that's Lord Satan Beelzebub.
He lives in the wardrobe.
He sees clinky little red claws as he opens up. No one ever oils the hinges. You sit in your bed thinking about the prime real estate of all places you have to live. Why in monster prime real estate?
Oh, that was a dramatic pause, man.
We're going to continue with Brad with the topic, fruit is a health hazard.
Never eat fruit. It's full of sugar. It will only rot your teeth. And it's actually sponsored by Fruit Co. They're actually a subsidiary of Coca-Cola.
Scott.
Oh, yes, they're a subsidiary of Coca-Cola. Their first boy was into Fanta, which is just an orange squeezed into a can. No extra added sugar, just one orange, including the pith. Now, the pith is actually the only healthy part of...
Sorry, you were talking about pith and I got distracted. Stacey.
There is one exception. One can eat fruit if it is mixed with alcohol. This is perfectly acceptable. If it is stood on, fermented, blended, mixed with ice, added cream, coconut cream.
Too many verbs. All right. Final to take it home. Tim, everything is better with a fresh set of Derwent colour pencils.
Oh, entirely true. Who can not remember the joy of opening up that pack of 36? Derwent, all colour coded, and you're thinking, I'm going to draw a unicorn. I'm going to draw a rainbow. I'm going to draw a battleship shooting that unicorn and the rainbow crying. What if we're all just a bullet of Derwents now and draw each other? Wouldn't it be a bit of world here? I've got paper. Let's have a crack. Let's all draw a rainbow together. This one's not crying. This one's upside down smiling rainbow. And the unicorn's on roller skates. Are you seriously not going to do this?
Your voice is just so melodious, I just couldn't stop listening.
That's melodious, man. You need to get out.
And that's the end of that round. So it looks like in the lead of that round was Tim, because I kept letting him go. But I will... Oh, yes. I won't be able to determine the winner, because I will need to total points. But before we do, it's time to reveal that answer to the Grain of Truth connection challenge we mentioned before. Ah. Now, did anybody, firstly, on the panel, were able to get a connection between media, monsters, medicine, and literature?
Got it. 1998, Frankenstein was remade, starring Robert De Niro. Literature, Mary Shelley. Medicine, the Mad Doctor. Monster, the Frankenstein, and media, it's a movie.
Oh, that's fabulous. Anyone else got any other?
I was going to say, there's probably an X-Files episode with watching TV.
That's your answer to everything.
Probably an X-Files. Probably.
Well, the answer that I was looking for was Andrew Wakefield. Now, Andrew, just to explain what it is. Now, if you're not sure who he was a former British surgeon, so medicine, and he was struck off the medical register in 2010.
No longer medicine.
Yes, no longer medicine. He's ex-medicine. He has ceased to medicine. In 1998, he published Literature, a controversial article since falsified that there was a link, apparently, between measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination and autism. And even though it's since been proved wrong, but it has been broadcast in all forms in the media, including the Australian Vaccination Network, which ironically is anti-vaccination. And his findings have been since described as the most damaging medical hoax of the last 100 years. So therefore, he is some sort of horrible monster. So that was our grain of truth that connects all three, but it just remains me to total up the points, and the winner of Heisenberg's Public Transport Uncertainty Principle is Dr. Brad McKay! Yay! That's the end of the program, and I hope you enjoyed it. You can come and see the recording on the first Saturday of the month at 1 p.m. at the Wesleyan. Our website is www.grainoftruth.com.au, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/grainoftruthshow. It just leaves me now to thank Stacey Taylor, Scott McAteer, Dr. Brad McKay, Tim Redman, our announcer and composer Matthew Hadgraaf, Damien Sutton, and the Wesleyan. I've been your host, David Innes. Have a splendid day! This has been a rock star production.